welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Despite that ominous disclaimer, we will be bringing you factual information.
Yes, and it won't hurt one bit.
You know, if you want to sue them, like, yeah, don't do that. You don't want to do that. You can... Ain't nobody got time for that. That's what's happening. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. John Deere and Kubota, the number one and number two tractor lines in the world. Come by and see them. Springtime has sprung, and I think the weather's going to hit the 80s or 90s here in the next week or two. And it's a good time.
Your grass is going to be up over your knees.
Yeah, it's going to be tall. You're going to need to go out and cut that grass, plow them fields. Go in there and see them about a tractor. They're fully loaded up, stocked with all different models. You can go in there and pick out the one that's right for you. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller there on Twin View. And their phone number is 226-9226.
And if your tractor's busted, you should take it in there, too.
Absolutely. We got top-notch mechanics in there that can fix you up and get you back on the road. So, Team Power.
Go see Uncle Bill at Team Power.
No, there's no Uncle Bill there, but you could go in anyway. Knucklehead.
I like to mess up Bill's commercial. I live to mess up Bill's commercial, and my goal is to mess it up a different way each time.
And you're very good at it.
Just one more new twist so I can get the...
Move along. So I can nothing get, to see here.
So I can get the look. Please give me the look. Oh, my goodness. So, back to the business at hand. Syria. We're going to switch. We're going to switch from voter fraud and all that good stuff to Syria.
Man, so, there's a lot going on in Syria right now.
There is a lot happening in Syria.
But we got the inside track.
Our guest is Bruce Moran. He's a national security advisor. He is with Security Solutions Technologies. It's a veteran-owned company, provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, security assessments, cybersecurity, geospatial. They're doing it all. Mm-hmm. If it's stuff you don't know anything about, they're doing it.
I can get him to fly a drone over your house if you don't shape up.
I'm just going to make sure you're in it while I'm there.
It's already been done.
I can count on you, Bruce.
Nice segue there, Bruce. So before we get too carried away, I just want to let people know, just in case they're not at their computer while they're listening, there's a giant document you sent us with all sorts of information. Maybe you could give them, how about this, the sales pitch on the document, because I think people should go read it.
That's the one that's called Syria Arms Control?
Yep, and yeah. I posted it in long form and in a downloadable PDF.
Yeah, one of the things we need to take a look at is that Syria has signed their ban on chemical weapons that dates back to September 12th of 2013. So if we move forward, President Trump and his National Security Council, him in particular, has the gut instinct just to pull out. I'm in total agreement with that. It's not only the chemical weapons, it's the entire situation of the civil war that's been going on since, we can say, the Arab Spring in 2011. So that's like April. So this is not something that's current. It's fomenting over years. There's no resolutions. We should probably have other, as we pull out, though, there needs to be, like what happened in Iraq. We don't want that to happen in Syria. If we're pulling out, then the European Union and the United Nations and other Arab countries should take over where we've been and start to, you know, move forward on our policy and our program, and then they can continue on, you know, and adjusting the program and the policy to contain the radical faction of ISIL that's still there, or ISIS. And then we have the Nusra Front that's there in the northern part of Syria, and that's, they're called HT now, and that's still a terrorist organization. That's Al-Qaeda with another name on it. They are Al-Qaeda, and they've formed HT, which is like 5, 6, 7 different Islamic groups.
Great.
So they come in and out. So they were initially fighting with ISIS. They broke away, and then they started to control the northern part of Iraq. So that's a big problem. And it's been ongoing for, like I was saying, 6.5, 7 years. And we held negotiations, you know, with them at a convention in Geneva, and that really never boiled down to anything. And then we helped get ISIS out of Iraq, and we're doing our share. We're carrying the, you know, heavy load in Syria, and the Russians did too, and it's time to say adios amigos. You know, this is not anything that we're fully vested in terms of our national security interests. It is, but it's not more our concern. It's just as much the European Union's concern as it is the Arab nation's concern. So that's what I'm saying. We're in there. We're battling away, and it's time for somebody else to take over.
Right.
Well, that makes sense. And then you hear all these people who say if we do that, like Bill was listening to something this morning, that if we pull out of there, then all of a sudden you get a whole bunch of other bad guys fill the void.
No, that's not what I'm saying. It's time for the European Union, Germany, Britain, bring in their special forces there. Let the Kuwaitis, let the Saudis bring in the Jordanians. Jordanians are taking the heavy brunt of this because they got a huge amount of refugees there, too,
mm-hmm.
from this. So, you know, and even in Turkey, I think with the last, I think it was 6.1 million refugees coming from there. It's the largest refugee crisis since World War II. And we're not including the displaced people that came from both Iraq and Syria. They're both in the countries. They're still trying to get back into their homes. And we're not talking about the refugees that came from Iraq. So we have a whole slew of, I call it a Pandora's box. I wrote a report on this in 2013, that it's just way out of hand. And we've done our share, more than our share. Now it's time for other people to step in for us.
Exactly. As far as Syria goes, I think what Aaron was referring to was one of the lines of thought is that if the U.S. pulls out and the other countries don't step in and start carrying the load to keep these guys at bay, then you're going to have Russia, Iran, and Syria all kind of gang up and kind of take over that region. Would you agree with that?
No, not at all.
Okay.
If you have France in there and Britain, they're permanent members on the UN Security Council.
Right.
If you saw what happened here, it was United States, United Kingdom, Britain, and France. They're permanent members on UN Security Council, so they're the ones that did the strike here just recently.
Okay. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's clarify that a little bit. As who's out there right now to pick up the slack if the U.S. pulls out of Syria.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, what the heck? You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I see trouble on the way. I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times today. Don't go around tonight, but it's bound to take your life.
I hear people about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
So there you have it.
It's the best intro I could give you, Bruce.
Yeah, while we're talking about, you know, the UN having a situation that has to deal with chemical weapons, and that's the reason why we went into, because the chemical weapons themselves are very, very, not only dangerous, but they're easily to disperse.
Right.
You have them as nerve agents, vesicants, blood agents, choking agents. You see them using riot control and the psychometric points. So that's all the things that happen with people when you lose their feeling, get paralysis and rigidity in their body. I mean, as I looked at it, on the whole, they signed on to the, Syria signed on to the convention to stop the chemical weapons abuse, and those things can be dispersed immediately in the area. And, of course, in Europe. And where have the refugees gone and where has ISIS gone? They've gone to Europe. So if you're asking me who should be participating in the council or to have it done, the United Nations Security Council, or as we would formally say, a coalition, you'd probably draw up a UN security resolution and then have these particular countries come on board and then commit to a certain amount of troops. We have 2,000 troops there, so that's not a significant amount, but it's, you know, special forces. So they have the firepower and they have the backup. You know, they have the aircraft carriers there and, you know, submarines.
But the problem with the UN is, I mean, look at it right now. This chemical attack happened, what, 2 weeks ago, and they still haven't got access to the site. And what's the UN doing? I mean,
I'm talking about, this is a different, that's two different discussions.
Okay.
Okay, this, the current, you're going tangentially on me.
That Phil, gotta watch him every minute.
he saw the seven questions I wrote on it, that's why he wants to go there.
he's cheating off the
syllabus. And those are serious questions. But we're talking about all the attacks that have occurred in the European Union, you know, the countries from ISIS and the jihadists, they should be very concerned about how this is going to happen and goes down later in Syria. If you're asking me who should be on the coalition, there's, you know, everybody in Europe should be, you know, sending somebody.
Right.
As you always see the strong hold of the British, because they have a great group of you know, SAS special forces people, and they, you know, they can come in there immediately. This is not new to them. You bring the French in there, and you also bring in their, you know, their frigates and stuff to support them. You know, if they need to shoot a cruise missile, as you saw, the Brits and the French were also shooting missiles too. So this was a, you know, the three permanent members on the UN Security Council taking control and making sure that a strong and hard message was sent not only to Russia but to Syria, you know, because we have a interest in there to make sure that chemical weapons aren't going to be dispersed throughout Europe. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So that makes more, to me, common sense that as we're pulling out, then other people will pull in to make sure that they should support the efforts that we established, and they can continue forward on a strategy, or they might have a different strategy, you know, and what they want to do and have some resolution with the Syrian government and the Russians. Because it's not only the Russians, it's Hezbollah and it's the Iranians there too.
Right.
So they're operating in full force. And Nusra Front, as I said later, is HT, which is an arm of Al-Qaeda that operates up north and in Lebanon also. So as we're looking at this entire picture, I'm trying to give more of an educational, you know, view of it, so we know what we're doing there and the logic for our, you know, national security justification for, you know, what we want to do there, what we've done, and now it's time for other people to be concerned about the national security of their countries too, along with ours. As I said, we took the larger yoke to carry forward. Now it's time for them, you know, to come on and, you know, substitute their troops, their missiles, their submarines, their frigates, their, you know, their vessels, you know, their air force. And
right.
That's not really that difficult. It's just, you know, the commitments, and, you know, they have to really get on board. Macron is here, and they're having the first dinner.
Right.
So maybe President Trump may want to introduce that to him. But we're also going through North Korean, you know, talks. It's never been done before with Kim, so there's a lot of things to bring to the table. And North Korea has not signed on to the chemical weapons ban. So if they're going to a nuclear denuclearization program, then I think maybe they could, if that's part of the negotiations. I don't know what Mike Pompeo did, but there's a chemical weapon part of this also that can be addressed, because they're not on board at all. So, you know, Sudan, South Sudan, Egypt, and North Korea have not signed on to the chemical weapons ban at all. So that's what we're looking at there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the serious part of this discussion. And let's take a look at what we did. I think that's important.
Yeah, do you think it was
effective?
Because
how we conducted our mission
right.
is a very important part of understanding how we did it, what we did, and to what extent, you know, we went forward. and there wasn't any collateral damage to civilians, and that's how precise the bombing was. That's how exact it is. That's how sophisticated we were. And what I'm also saying here is Kim also saw this. He saw us drop the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. He saw the first Syrian strike, and he saw this one, which was much more, you know, exact and a lot
more
firepower. Mm-hmm. I was Kim, and I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, sure, I want to come to the table now. You know, it's not only that the sanctions are being effective, but I don't want to be on the other side of the receiving end of this kind of weaponry coming at me and my people in North Korea.
Right. No, I think that's a huge part. I think Kim, I think it did open his eyes, because it was a very surgical strike. We haven't heard of any collateral damage. I think everything we aimed at, we hit. Do you think it was effective as far as stopping
it? Highly coordinated CENTCOM attack.
Uh-huh.
We're from three different theaters,
right,
what we call platforms. And the Red Sea, the Northern Arabian Gulf, and the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. That's a highly sophisticated, you know, you're shooting off 105 missiles and they're all coming in at the same time. You know, that's something to take into consideration. I'm talking about Kim and Assad, and the Russians know this.
Right.
The Russians did not help when these missiles started coming in.
Right.
They knew, you know, not to get involved there. They wanted to see what happened. They saw it, and they said, oh, my God, this is much more than they probably would have assumed and how it actually took place. So,
well, I saw
it was
some of the,
a well-done job. The president did a great job. You know, the British did a great job, May and Macron. It was just a well-executed plan. Of course, the United States took, you know, a larger part of the lead here, but, you know, it's not just the United States anymore, like I'm saying. It's everybody's business to be concerned about chemical weapons, to be about, it's about where they are at, who has them, and how to make sure they don't have them anymore. So if he signed on in 2013, Assad, and he still has them, you know, this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a base in Haifa, you know, we have our bases in Signalia, you know, if they're going to be attacking, you know, he can attack in a lot of different places on the European theater, on the Libya front, come from there, you know, there's all kinds of places that ISIS and different kinds of factions can, once they have access to chemical weaponry, they can use them, and it's an atrocity.
Well,
I'll beside myself if I have to go into the you know, the emotional impact it takes, you know, to you know, help the people out there that've been exposed to this, you know. So
I saw pictures before and after on some of the targets that they hit, and I mean, you want to talk about surgical? They showed pictures of these plants that were, I mean, completely obliterated, and right across the street there were buildings that weren't touched. So it was, I mean, if I was looking at that as somebody to be on the wrong end of an attack like that, they hit exactly what they were aiming at and nothing else. It was pretty impressive. Do you think it was effective as far as stopping their ability, though, to make more? I mean, do you think we hit enough?
No, we put a dent in it.
Right.
So, yeah, and it was a surgical strike, so it was enough to send a big message. We hit one of their bunkers, you know, where they store it. We hit one of the factories where they make it, you know, and then we hit one of the research and development. That's huge. But as we know, to make camp, it's only about, you know, to reinstitute, to reconstitute it, they call it. Those are the words they use. It's only about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So if they signed on in 2013, if it goes 6 months after that, and they had scientists there, you know, it's not hard to make these things. It comes from fertilizers. It comes from organic compounds. I took all the information off on that because if you look at it, it gives other people ideas about how you can make this stuff.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, we don't want to be posting that.
All you need is a master's degree in chemistry. And you can go far enough to start making something. It's not going to be large, significant, but it's enough to, you know, make enough compound to hurt a lot of people.
So what do you think Russia, what their position on this is? I mean, we hear a lot about how they're backing Assad. This kind of puts them in a little bit of a precarious situation, doesn't it, to be on the wrong side of this chemical attack?
Yeah, they're backing what we would consider a United Nations international law. But at the same time, Syria is violating the international law. So you have this very big dilemma of what's happening in the area and how you're dealing with the jihad terrorists. And Assad was fighting them. Of course, he's fighting al-Qaeda too. But he's also trying to preserve his government. So what I'm talking about, the UN Security Council and the UN itself doesn't call for regime change.
Right.
You know, that's what was our message to Assad. We're not looking for regime change. We're looking for just get rid of those chemical weapons and you deal with your civil war. There were a lot of countervailing forces and many, many, I call it militant groups or jihadist groups in that region. And some of them are mercenary and they go where the money's at. You also have the Kurds there. And you have the problems that are arising between the Kurds and the Turks. It gets, you know, very insidious on who's doing what and what time, and then they change sides. And the Kurds are going to protect the Kurds' interests there and in Iraq. You know, they think they deserve it. They were gassed in, I think, 98, 99 by Saddam Hussein. So they had to deal with it there themselves. So they understand the dynamics, but in terms of we're talking about a Pandora's box, it's a really hard situation for anybody to be there on a consistent level and deal with. Now, how I would probably analyze this would be when you're in a no-go zone and you're flying there and then you're trying to help people and you can't help them. You know, that's a terrible situation to be in and trying to help on a humanitarian way. And that's why you're looking at this large exodus of people that are refugees from Syria. Nobody really addressed this from the get-go. We are dealing with Iraq, and that was our baby. You know, we were finishing up with Saddam Hussein, and, you know, then they had their transitional government come in, then they had elections, and, you know, we pulled out, and Barack Obama took over, and, you know, he did what he thought was necessary, and we saw at the end there that he didn't leave any troops and left a void for ISIS to come in and take over Mosul, which became their capital. They had two capitals, Raqqa, and which is in Syria, and Mosul. And when they took over Mosul, they got all their armaments. They had all the U.S. Tanks and vehicles. You know, they had the ones with the machine guns on it, the turrets, and that's where you saw them running all the way down to Fallujah.
Yeah, that was really generous of us to.
That was the problem with
all available.
With the Iraqis not guarding it and not protecting it.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand that. We didn't do it on
but
purpose.
But we left them enough to protect themselves, and they didn't do it. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. Oh, we've got to take a quick break. We're here with our guest, Bruce Moran. We're talking about Syria and all things connected. You've got a really good document on there online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I switched on the radio and nearly dropped it. So bad that I fell out of bed. There was a gas strike, oil strike, lorry strike, a bed strike. Gotta be a Superman to survive. Gas bill, rent bill, tax bill, phone bill. I'm such a wreck.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. Are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And that's why we have Bruce on.
That's right.
So we can find out what's going down.
Hey, Bruce, what's happening with Turkey and Saudi Arabia? Did Saudi Arabia have a coup attempt last night? Did you hear anything about that?
I haven't been following that. I've been looking at the... there's always, I would say, different kinds of interplays that are happening between the powers, and Turkey is sometimes, it looks like they shouldn't be part of the European Union, they want to be, And Erdogan, he's... Yeah, I saw some of that, you know, and somebody actually emailed me on it, and I said, well, I can't make a comment on it yet until I can kind of figure out the different points of departure where I can make a legitimate salient point. And kind of too early for me to see what's going on there. The Saudis are probably, you know, working to help support efforts in southern Syria, because if that goes, then you have this, we have a base in Haifa, which is in Israel. This is very complicated. That's why I'm trying to think of a good answer to give you. Now, I did see that, but I couldn't answer, you know, definitively on how this complicated issue in Syria, and this is South Syria I'm talking about, where they had a ceasefire, and now it's starting to end.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a different change in the scope of how maybe U.S. policy will happen and how the United Nations will act and the different plays between the Saudi government, who's just changed hands. You know that, right? The Saudis, you know, had gone through a great transformation in their own government in the last 6-7 months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. This is much more complicated in how we're going to address this issue, and I call it a Pandora's box. It really is, you know, on steroids, because you have these different factions, and you don't know where they're at, what they're doing, how they're doing it. So if southern, here's a good example. If southern Syria seems to have problems and starts to fail, that gives ISIS a window to come in. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. I don't think it's the only way, but it leaves it vulnerable. You see what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yep.
So, and Turkey's up, you know, they've taken their amount of large refugees in, but they've been fighting the Kurds. You know, they send tanks over there, and the Kurds are fighting them back. So, and who's fighting there? You know, part of the war is being fought in Syria, too. And the Kurds are fighting, you know, against this. They want their independence. They want to be recognized in the government, you know. And I'm talking about the Syrian government.
Right.
So there's all these different problems they're having. What I'd like to really address, and that's what you talked about earlier, is the chemical weapons,
right,
the inspections, and that's pretty important, because this carries forward to what happens around the world. And what the UN inspectors are going to do when there's a high possibility that chemical weapons are in an area and are not being correctly addressed.
Yeah, because they haven't been able to get in there yet, have they? Or are they in there now?
It's complicated in a way, because I want to talk about first that they should have been in there.
Right.
Because Syria signed the ban in 2013. How come they weren't there in the first place? See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If we're sending missiles in, how come the UN inspectors weren't there to help prevent the chemical weapons from being reconstituted in Syria? Are you going to come in? You're going to go out. You're going to go in. You're going to go out. You're going to come in. You know.
Well, that's what I mean about the UN. It's kind of a mess. They don't seem to be able to.
That's what we're talking about.
Do the job they're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
Exactly. I think you're right, and I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying, if you want to look in practical terms, and this country has chemical weapons, you should have UN inspectors there all along. It's one of the only countries in the world that didn't come on and sign on until 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been used, you know, thereafter. So if it wasn't the Syrian government, if it was al-Nusra Front, HT, if it was one of the rebel groups that had chemical weapons or biological weapons, you really want to know what's going on. They've had like seven or more incidences of this. This is uncalled for. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And we still don't know, do we?
We have indications, you know, but, you know, that's why we, you know, shot the missiles over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, the CIA and, I can't talk on that matter. I can talk about what I'm looking at and what hasn't been done. So what I'm talking about is the Hague is where the UN protocol is to send the chemical weapons inspectors in. They need a fast. They need to have a fast track when something like this happens. That's what I think you're saying. They need a rapid response chemical weapons team to come out right away. The Russians went in there 3 and 4 days after it happened.
Yeah, they claim that they were there right after it happened, and
Russians are claiming that it took too long for the UN to get their chemical weapons inspectors in there. So what does that mean? How come Russia wasn't working? This is my perspective. How come Russia wasn't working with the UN inspectors when their troops were going in there to look at what happened to bring them along with?
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
No.
You can't say they're not in there and they're not doing it, and the UN didn't have permanent inspectors in there. There's something wrong in this picture, and the picture is, if they had chemical weapons in Syria, but they're also maybe in other areas, how come we don't know right away? If the Russians are going in there, that's Putin's responsibility to take the chemical weapons inspectors from the UN with him right there to do a what? A cursory review, you know, to give a basic report, if you can't give a full report, and give it back to the UN, give it to the Russians, and give it to the UN Security Council. That's what I would consider a proper and fitting thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you listen to his or their talk there in the UN when him and Nikki Haley were kind of bantering back and forth, they were claiming that they had already been in there and that Syria wasn't responsible. Well, how did they know that? Why? And like you say, why wasn't the UN involved in that initial inspection?
Yes, sir. That's exactly the point.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki Haley's right on. She's great too.
I think she's awesome.
She's been a great UN ambassador, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were working with her on, the Christian genocide, too. So there's other aspects to this, you know, when ISIS came through. I mean, you have that part of it, the human rights violations there. See, if you look at chemical weapons, it's human rights violation. But you look at how the people are being treated themselves, that's human rights violations, too. So the Civil War itself left a lot of displaced people as well as refugees. And that's a humongous problem to deal with. That's why I'm saying if we go back to the beginning of our conversation, we need to address the people who are going to take our place there, the places where all the refugees went, and then where all ISIS infiltrated their countries. And if they get access to chemical weapons, you know, there goes Britain, there goes, you know, the Netherlands, there goes Belgium, there goes Italy. They'll start using it there. That's why you got to contain it in the area we know it's absolutely at, and restrict it and have the chemical weapons inspectors in there right now.
Well, do you think those countries will stick around?
On the scope, I'm upset personally because we were in there in Iraq, you know, and that was in 2003, and a lot of these things were fomenting over the time. And it was never really. Well, President Trump is absolutely right. We didn't do the right things for, you know, 20, 30 years here. Finally, he's putting his foot down, saying we got to get stuff done. You know, you draw a red line, you keep it. We're going to go in there. We're going to tell you we don't want to do it. Okay, I'm pulling out of negotiations. You know, if you do it, then we'll be there. We'll back you up. But we can't be the policeman to the world. That's what
I'm
saying.
Right.
No, and I agree with that. My only concern is when we pull out of Syria, which I think he's serious about that. I think we are going to pull out. Will these other countries stick around and get the job done in our absence? I mean, they got skin in the game. They need to do that. But you think they'll be willing to maintain a presence over there if we're not?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, or I guess today that's the billion-dollar question.
Yeah.
That's today.
Million bucks doesn't buy anything anymore.
You know, if you're going to send troops in there, it's going to be $1 billion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When we grew up, it was a little less. So.
$1 million, yeah.
that used to be a staggering amount. Not so any longer.
Amy just passed away, so, you know, they had that on the news.
Who did?
Minnie Me.
You did?
Yeah, that was just the last 2 days.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't hear that.
So $1 million has changed a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And for all those people who don't know what we're talking about, that was
Austin Powers
all over
reference. The world, and we, I'm saying policemen to the world, but we also have bases there that have to be sustained and protect our interests at home.
Right.
And if this isn't be ongoing, we can't be doing it ongoing there. We've done our share. And it's time for them to take over. And President Trump saying the same thing. Let's get people in there that can do the job, get the job done, and make sure that they can carry forward on a strategy. It doesn't have to be ours. It could be other things that can happen. It can be Assad could agree to another election, or, you know, they just had one. And a lot of people didn't participate, but it's because it was controlled by rebel groups. It's controlled by, like I say, Nusra Front, or it's called HG now. So how can you participate if it's that, you know, I think 55% of the country participated in the election. That was one of the questions I had at the end there. You know, how that's what I'm talking about. If it's so volatile and we're calling it Pandora's box that you can't get a handle on it, let some other people come in and take over and kind of figure out maybe there's other ways to work things out. We've done our best, and it's not always firepower. You know, we've definitely exhibited we have the firepower to come in. We've also did sanctions, so we have the power economically to do it. We've also done diplomatic, you know, relations, and they've broken down. So let other people take control and let them step up and show that they can be responsible adults in handling the serious situation. See what I mean?
Yeah, because obviously the adults in charge are
responsible adults.
Not doing it.
Responsible countries. We can't be adult supervision everybody every time, any place, anywhere.
which is probably good, because we're not always good at it either. But I got to say, we're way ahead of these folks. We have to take a really quick break.
Okay.
A little celebration of capitalism here. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
See, they could be a lot happier. Whiskey for the men, beer for the horses. You don't have to gas anybody. It's not required.
No.
We need to go back to the Wild West, get rid of all this chemical crap. So, Bruce, we hear all sorts of conflicting things coming from all over the place. What do you think the advantage, I mean, the administration being involved in this, they kind of have to. They don't really have a choice. But they seem to get a black eye over everything. How do they get out of this without getting a black eye?
Well, I
stump
think
the panel.
What we're looking at is a policy change that the previous administrations haven't really carried forward on. And that is not a interventionist type of policy where you go around the world, but having a more liquid policy where you use your special forces, your SEAL teams, your special ops groups more sparingly and allow things to work themselves out. I think it's a policy change that is happening in the National Security Council. We have a new National Security Council head, John Bolton. He's been there, and he's done many of these things, and he also knows what needs to be changed. McMaster just stepped down, and we have also a conditional response we need to have on a permanent basis with the Caliphate State, the ISIS jihadists, the Islamic jihadists. And that's another overriding problem there in Syria and Libya. So if you're asking me how do we address it, what are we going to do, how are we going to do it, it's a larger strategy. It involves a lot of different, I would call playbooks to address it when it happens. It's always going to be in the here and now. As we're looking at chemical weapons, we know that Syria signed on, but they didn't go forward with it. North Korea didn't sign on. South Sudan didn't sign on. And Egypt didn't sign on to the chemical weapons ban. Then we got to worry about the nuclear capability of Iran. And that's part of this Middle East crisis, I would call it, problem. And these are interlinking high-end commitments we are going to be making. So as the Saudis are changing their, I would call it, national security policy, and it's more on board with us, you see it helping support Israel. Israel is taking a new direction, so they're being more supported by us. As you knew that Netanyahu wasn't supported by the past administration, so you know they actually supported groups on the ground to run against him. So we have now a better position. It's more solid, but it has to be a more fluid national security strategy. And that's what President Trump's looking at. So as Ron Paul will be a non-interventionist, you know, with a libertarian policy, President Trump isn't like that because he knows we're all over the world and we have to really deal with a situation. I'm viewing it more in a practical sense where we understand the strategical objectives of our country, our national security import to protect our own citizens, and then how we're going to implement the program in a long run through our, you know, CIA, through our Defense Department to make sure that we are doing everything possible to protect United States citizens. That's where a lot of people are getting this wrong. We're not there to protect other citizens per se. We have national security interests and we have humanitarian interests, of course. But it's the first and primal. If the United States doesn't exist and we go down, then everything else falls apart.
Yeah, it's funny. The humanitarian side of it seems to be the part that people don't understand is the right word.
I would say that.
It's kind of a, hey, you know what, it's a long way away, you know. It's too bad, but it's their own guys, so you know, we can't be involved in everything.
Yeah, you can take a hard line approach that way and say, let's not get involved at all, but you do have to intercede when it's absolutely necessary. You see what I mean?
No, yeah. I mean, I see what you mean. It's interesting, though. It's the same people who are, you know, having a love fest over Earth Day. So it's just kind of funny to me.
Well,
very conflicting.
You know, I'm an environmentalist. I'm a conservationist myself, but I'm practical.
Oh, okay, so we can still like you without breaching our principles. Then,
pardon?
We can still like you without breaching our own principles. Because I'm still going to litter on Earth Day because that's the one day a year I litter.
Take walks in the park. They want to, you know, enjoy the outdoors, whitewater rafting, everything. You know, all the stuff that you can do, camping, you know, be out in nature. I don't think anybody's against that. Protect your wildlife refugees, you know, support the, you know, national forest. That's all part of what we do.
Yeah, but we don't have to hug all the trees.
Well, there's when you go excessive.
Yeah, we get a lot of hugging out here.
Yeah, well,
I realize in Chicago you're not overrun with public land.
Well, there's trees everywhere, and I'm not saying they're good or bad. I mean, their intentions are good.
No, it's bad.
But how they're implementing their strategies are not always proper and fitting for the organizations they belong to. Some of them are more radical, and they cause problems, as we saw in. South Dakota. I mean, they become not only radicalized, but they cause, you know, they can kill people too. So you got the extreme parts in all these different groups, and some of them think you need to take it to the nth degree.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, it goes wrong, because they're not understanding the larger dynamic that this country is for all of us.
Well, that is a radical idea right there. I don't know who led you to believe that was factual.
Yeah, that's true.
How dare you? See, that's why they have that big disclaimer at the beginning of the hour. You know, because now we're just talking nonsense.
You know, the derogatories, you know, everything else, you know, because they want to pit one side against the other, Americans against Americans. We're not Americans against Americans. The political parties are doing that to make sure that they get elected. And that's a strategy But I'm not part of that. I'm the national security people. You know, well, you want to make sure everybody's protected. We want to make sure our borders are protected. You know, that's a whole different ball game when you start getting into the wedge issues. You know.
A wedge issue. I think everything's a wedge issue these days.
And they make it.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if it isn't, they're working on it. There's like a whole. They must be. They have a whole think tank.
John was on before me, and he's running for Secretary of State, and a lot of that has to do with not having a secure border.
Yes, I was going to ask you. We have 2 minutes. Can you give us an update on the border? No pressure.
Well, Chuck was on, and General Vallee was on, and they're talking about different strategies for implementing on the border. And maybe you might want to have them on a different show, Chuck and I, or Doug.
Yeah. Is it looking up? I mean, are we going the right direction?
Yeah, you need a border.
Well, no, I mean, like, is policy
what
and...
General Vallee was saying, he was saying that if you go back in time, and this might be hard for some people, and I'm not being, you know, sarcastic or critical or cynical.
Oh, come on.
But you have to really take a look at the history of our border. And we used to have our troops down there. I'm talking about military troops.
Right.
Now we switch to border security, immigration, naturalization. But we're not doing what we're supposed to do, protect our borders. And
right.
Jerry Brown's your governor, and now he's taking some flack.
Rub it in.
Some of these mayors are saying, we don't want it either. We don't want your policies. We don't want sanctuary cities. It's causing problems. There's criminal activity going on, you know. So, as you can see, it's the MS-13, and it's just not that. It's the drug cartels. And as I pointed out, I think it was maybe 3 months ago, the drug business in the United States, not just coming across the border, but once it gets into the United States, it's somewhere in the $325 billion to $750 billion range. So you wonder why our kids are on opium in the high schools, and they're overdosing in colleges. It's happening on the streets in Chicago, in L.A., in New York, in St. Louis, in Baltimore, in Miami.
It's just Houston. Like everything else. You follow the money.
And that's a heck of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep,
and that influences a lot of different people in positions. That's what I'm saying. So this idea of national security is far-reaching. The strategy that President Trump has in place is addressing it. And if people don't want to get on board, I think there's something wrong on that program.
Well, Jerry Brown's got it all figured out. I think in the near future, he'll come out with a program to where we can just get rid of our borders and... sing Kumbaya and
we'll become Mexifornia.
Bibles, and yeah, we'll be okay. We'll be okay.
Can I have a closing statement?
Sure.
Thank you for having me on always. You know, God bless America. God bless everybody in Ukraine and Europe. And I hope we can address this Syrian crisis. And we got one coming up with North Korea, and the president's addressing it excellently. And you're doing a great job on your radio station to help us all out understand a lot of these things that are going down. Glad you had the Secretary of State on. He's trying to make a change there, too.
Absolutely.
You guys are doing a great job.
Well, I appreciate you coming
thanks,
on.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce, and we'll keep have you on again. A lot going on to talk about.
Keep us posted,
thank you
and thanks for all the info. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.